Is it the Anthony Edwards breakout game or the Patrick Beverley revenge game? Plus, Kyrie is nearly perfect, but did the Nets look that good in their win over the Cleveland Cavaliers? And we preview tonight's play-in games. It's the Wednesday episode of Locked On NBA. Let's go.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know. Association, part of the Locked On podcast team every day. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Matt on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales at John_Corrales on Twitter. I host Locked On Celtics.
We had some fun games last night. I love the play-in tournament. You get stakes into everything on like a random Tuesday night. We had two games, the Nets beating the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll talk about that in the second segment of today's show. But first, let's lead off with the Minnesota Timberwolves beating the Los Angeles Clippers 109-104. All right, like, is this the Anthony Edwards breakout game, John, or the Patrick Beverley revenge game? Like, what is the title of this one?
I don't know, man. This is almost like you got one storyline and then you got the remix. You know, you could do like two different things. I can't pick one because Reggie Jackson made so many plays down the stretch. And then Anthony Edwards closed things out after Cat filed out. This was a wild one for the Minnesota Timberwolves. But if you're making me pick one, maybe I'll give Pat Bev the tie for the revenge because he was so animated after the game, throwing his jersey into the stands. I mean, he celebrated a championship the floor after that play-in game.
He's running around, but a lot to him, right? This is a guy who, you know, was kind of jettisoned away, almost disrespected by the Los Angeles Clippers, and wanted to really stick it to him, and he didn't have a good do it with the scoring, but he did it with all of the Patrick Beverley things you really expect from him to do. The like pesky defense, the annoying plays, drawing technicals and things like that too.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it, the annoying plays, because that's what I was going to say. Like, the Clippers got that firsthand look of like, oh, this is what it's like. It's like there's this old Family Guy clip of the guy in prison where he's got the knife and he's like threatening and he kind of like stabs himself. He goes, oh, this is what it feels like. Oh, I belong here. Like there's this Pat Beverley, like the Clippers are getting that like Pat Beverley, like, oh, this is what Pat Beverley feels like when you unleash him onto another team. Like we belong having lost this for having done that for so long. So, you know, he's very happy. And look, this is almost like a time release capsule of revenge, because not only did the Minnesota Timberwolves win and claim the seventh seed, but they now push the Clippers down into the eighth seed game, which means you're setting them up against the Phoenix Suns. And it's if the Clippers had won this game, there would have been a whole lot of talk about, well, wait a second now, Memphis is a tough matchup for, you know, this is a tough matchup for Memphis. You know, Paul George and blah, 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 experience versus youth. Now it's like, well, the Clippers are, you're literally shooting the Clippers into the sun in basketball terms. And Pat Beverley could have to
No, I know. But look, it was Anthony Edwards who took them home down the stretch. This was a miserable game for Carl Anthony Towns, who fouled out in the fourth quarter after shooting just 3 of 11, finishing with just 11 points on the night, 6 fouls. 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He was bothered all night by the smaller guys on the Clippers. You know, he kind of reverted to Cat from earlier on in the season, where if you put like a wing on him, kind of really get into him and kind of underneath him, it really seems to bother him a lot. And then maybe a questionable decision by Chris Finch to leave him in there and pick up his 4th foul in the first half. So it looked like at one point that this Timberwolves team was going to be done. And then Anthony Edwards just decided to arrive in probably the biggest game of his career and really take them home in the fourth quarter and be that go-to scorer, like their number one guy.
Yeah. I mean, this was Anthony Edwards. Hey, let's give D'Angelo Russell some love here too, because he had some big shots down the stretch. Basically once Karl Anthony Towns fouled out, the Timberwolves took off. It was, things were not going very well for Minnesota. And look, I was among the many sharpening our knives to skewer the play-in tournament for forcing the Timberwolves, who had a 10-game lead on the Clippers, a 10-game lead on the ninth seed, for having to play this. This should have just been Minnesota in 7, Clippers in 8, the way it was. And with all due respect to Locked On Pelicans host, the Pelicans and Spurs just didn't do enough to me to earn a potential spot in the playoffs here. So it was a very well-timed explosion for Anthony Davis to kind of erase that and say, okay, the Timberwolves did what they had to do. They held on to that 7 seed, and now they can move forward. But this is obviously a very huge development, because now you now know you have a guy that you can count on in these big moments. And Karl Anthony Towns, this might actually, I believe in the, you know, the silver lining stuff, that sometimes these horrible situations can actually be good, because Kat can sit there and have a look at this game, and it didn't cost the team. And the fact that they started to play better without him is a nice little, okay, I have to be mindful of how I'm playing with my teammates, and I have to be more aware of time, score, situation. That 6th foul was just horribly bad, completely unnecessary.
Horrible.
I mean, that was one of the worst 6 fouls you're going to get. So I think there could be a lot.
I was wondering what he was thinking, right? He tried to go over the back of someone on a rebound.
Yeah, no, it was a really terrible.
He was
terrible.
So weird.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible.
There you go. But Anthony Edwards was not. And you made a really good point about D'Angelo Russell, I thought, too. Like, he deserves a lot of credit. He had a big 2, which was almost the dagger in this one late in the 4th. And this is a guy who's kind of had a strange career, right? Like, kind of been all over the place. Finally ends up in Minnesota, where he's supposed to be the number 2, even like the kind of 1.5 to Karl Anthony Towns, but is able to kind of adjust to being a third guy and stepping up when need be. So I thought he deserved a lot of credit. He finished with 29 points compared to Anthony Edwards, who had 30 in this one.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell. I mean, this is why what they were envisioning when they got him, right? Like, this is, you pair Russell with Kat and now Anthony Edwards. This is supposed to be your future moving forward. So, and it was kind of funny that D'Lo's biggest shot of the game was a long 2, very signature D'Lo kind of shot. But you know, he stepped up, and you know 29 points on 55% shooting, and some of those big shots to go along with Anthony Edwards. I mean, that, if you're going to make up for the loss of Karl Anthony Towns due to foul trouble, that's a great way to go. And like, look, Naz Reid comes in and immediately rips a rebound out of somebody's hand and gets the put back. That's goes back to what I was saying. Like, those are the types of plays. Now, Kat has to sit on the sideline and see the types of plays that are being made to get them to get them past the Clippers. And shout out to D'Lo and to Anthony Edwards for seizing the moment at a time where it looked like the Clippers look big time fourth quarter team, but here come the Clippers melting down and making some questionable decisions. You know, Robert Covington only played 18 and a half minutes, probably could have used him against, you know, Anthony Edwards, who was roasting Marcus Morris over and over and over again. They needed to do something different defensively, and they just refused to. So for once this season, we can look at, like, wow, Ty Lue did not have a great game as a coach. And this was a very uncharacteristic Clippers performance for this season. And I expect them to get it back, and they'll finish in 8th, I think. But this was uncharacteristic for them, for sure.
Yeah, you know, there was no cohesion to the offense in the 4th quarter, really, whatsoever. You know, they scored 20 points in that period, and it was more just Paul George kind of doing some isolation and just doing his own thing. And he's so good that that can get them kind of far. But at the same point, he started to look a little bit gassed late in the fourth quarter. And you can still see he's still kind of working his way back into game shape just a little bit. But you're right. You know, this is kind of the opposite of what the Clippers have done when they're used to being the ones coming back from double digit deficits. And they were up by as many as 22 in this game. To see Ty Lue kind of get out coached there, to not really have an answer and not even be kind of prepared for anything, was genuinely shocking to me, I thought.
Yeah, it's not something that we've seen at all this season. And I think one thing that's happened with Ty Lue this season is he's really kind of ascended. The people have really given him, I think in the past, we've always, you know, known that he's a good coach and all of that. But I think this year he really kind of ascended to a next level. And to see him make some questionable decisions there really is a little bit surprising. And, you know, for a while there, I thought this was going to work out really well for them. Norm Powell was playing extraordinarily well. They were overcoming Paul George. This was almost very close to being the Paul George, okay, playoff P, like the joking kind of playoff P conversation. Yeah. You know, we were like this close, but he recovered. But still, like, you know, you wanted to see less of certain matchups, and I don't know. You know, look, everybody's allowed a bad game. This was a tough spot for the Clippers to get it. They probably felt like, all right, well, we're gonna win one of these two games. Maybe they just took it a little too lightly.
It could be. And they'll face the winner of the 9-10 game between the Pelicans and the San Antonio Spurs tomorrow. We'll preview that game in the third segment. Now we get Minnesota against the Memphis Grizzlies, which should be a pretty fun one. But there was another game in the play-in tournament last night. We'll talk about that. The Nets beating the Cleveland Cavaliers coming up here next in today's episode of Locked On NBA. Before we get to that, though, today's episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for a fraction of the price. That means polarized lenses, well-constructed durable frames, and premium high-end finishes. Also, something you won't find anywhere else is the Shady Rays Insane Protection Program. Shady Rays includes lost and broken protection on every single pair. They will send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happened. And if you don't love them, you'll pay nothing. It's as simple as that. Plus, 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America for every pair when you shop with Shady Rays. So exclusively for Locked On listeners, head to ShadyRays.com and use promo code Locked On to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's code Locked On for their best deal of the season. 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses, backed by over 150,000 verified five-star reviews. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Now for your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast. Going to be your savior during the playoffs here. Quick recaps of every game from the local experts covering it. You can't get all the context from a box store. Make sure you check out the Locked On Now podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, John, we got another game here. This one kind of impacts you a little bit with the, not a little bit, a lot of it, I should say, with the Brooklyn Nets beating, the Brooklyn Nets beating the Cleveland Cavaliers 115-108. This one looked like it was going to be a full-on rout. Brooklyn was up 40-20 after the first quarter, basically because Kyrie Irving was perfect. It took until the fourth quarter for him to miss his first shot in this game. He finished on the night where'd the number go? 34 points on 12 of 15 shooting. Kevin Durant had 25 points, but they didn't close the door on the Cavs. They only won here by 7. This goes to something you've been saying. So I'm just going to lead it off with the segment we do every Wednesday. Real or fake? You're worried about the Brooklyn Nets facing the Boston Celtics.
Fake. Very extraordinarily fake. I am not worried about the Celtics against the Brooklyn Nets. And I think that has to do with this game that we saw is very indicative of, I think, the Brooklyn Nets' recent stretch, right? Like, I think they had a nice lead, and whether they kind of cooled off or took things less seriously or whatever, they let the Cavaliers back in, and then they had a hard time closing them out. This should not have been 42 minutes of Kyrie and KD. This should have been 30 minutes of Kyrie and KD and garbage time for the fourth quarter with this Cavaliers team. They're just not the same Cavs that ascended as high as the third seed at one point. But in the second half, there are the Brooklyn Nets being outscored 65-58. They gave up 65 points to this Cavaliers team in a single half. So here, I don't see any adjustments that the Brooklyn Nets can make. And this is the number one reason why I don't fear them very much. I don't see them being able to make any adjustments other than what? Starting Claxton over Drummond. They're very switch heavy. They mix in some zone, and that's about it. I don't know of any wrinkles that they can throw out there. They are who they are. They've got Kevin Durant, who is certainly enough to strike fear into people. They've got Kyrie Irving, who has nights like this, but he also had this perfect night, a perfect half, and Durant had a very nice, like 12 points in the first half, and they were still only up by like 12 or 14 at the half. It's not like they were up by 25. They were only up by a very comfortable amount to make a comeback. And so I think that Brooklyn is susceptible defensively. I think Kyrie Irving is somebody you can target. Caris LeVert had a bad game, but still was able to get past Kyrie Irving anytime he wanted. There's just very little help on their defensive side. I think the Celtics are going to be a little bit better with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown driving than, you know, Caris LeVert and whoever else was trying to, like, Darius Garland had a good game. Darius Garland was good, but I just don't see how Brooklyn is going to, they're going to have to play KD and Kyrie 48 minutes a game. The Kyrie did all this stuff and was a +2 to finish the game. That doesn't bode well. When Kevin Durant sat for a few minutes, everything went into the tank. So, I don't know, you just lit a fuse and it just went off. I understand why people are afraid of Brooklyn because Kevin Durant is a god, but he can't play 48 minutes a game all series long. It's going to catch up with him. And even if he does, that's only to make the game competitive.
Yeah, look, the why I think people are not scared of them is just simply because they can't get stops, right? Like, that's the biggest thing in this one. Darius Garland went for 34 points and was really trying to keep this game as close as humanly possible. And no one else really stepped up on the Cleveland Cavaliers a ton. Like, they had some nice moments there, but Caris LeVert didn't play exceptionally well, especially in the first half. Lauri Markkanen didn't play particularly well at all of any points. Evan Mobley was good, particularly in the second half, scoring 13 points there. But you need more than that, and they didn't really have anyone else step up. And it took Kyrie Irving basically being perfect for this one to be what it is, right? Like, if he has a slightly off game, do they lose this one? Like, they very well might, I think. And I think that's something to keep in mind, right? Like, you mentioned they're not going to play Kevin Durant 48 minutes per game. You're not going to have Kyrie Irving go three quarters without missing a shot. If that happens, sure, they're going to win the series. And there's nothing you can do about that. But in a series that could go seven games, is that going to happen at all? And I don't think that's the case. So they feel like they need to be not just Kyrie perfect, but entirely perfect to win in a seven game series. If you get them in a game seven, they're terrifying, right? Because of what a guy like Kevin Durant can do, what Kyrie Irving can do. But it's not a game seven every time. It's not always going to be do or die where it's like, let's throw them out there and these guys will step up when they need to. You've got to play him over the course of a series, as you mentioned, where adjustments are made, where your depth might start to shine through at times. And they just don't have those things.
They don't have any depth. Seth Curry dealing with the bad ankle, 0-4. Dragic 1-3 coming back off of health and safety protocols and only played 10 minutes in this game. Patty Mills, you know, hit 2 of 5, but still minimal impact, not the guy that he was at the beginning of the year. You need all of those guys to come in and be big. Now, Bruce Brown was great in this game, and they found nice little roll with him, literally him rolling to the basket. But I get it. I understand all of the people who are saying, you know, you're afraid of Brooklyn. I feel like people are just, they're giving Kevin Durant his appropriate respect, but then I think they're just, he has to drag a very flawed team into a series. Hey, against the second seed in the East that has been one of the most dominant teams we've seen since January 1st, they have been rolling like crazy. Number one defense, number nine offense overall this year. They don't have Robert Williams, but I have this sneaking suspicion, the way the Celtics have been talking, they really believe that he's going to be back sooner. The initial talk has been 4 weeks, and they're not moving off of the 4 weeks, but everything else that they've been saying has really made it feel like they expect him to be back before that 4 weeks. I would not be surprised to see Robert Williams come back. And, you know, Bruce Brown specifically mentioned, hey, they don't have Robert Williams, we're going to be able to attack them after the game. And he got chastised by Kevin Durant. You know, KD was like, no, we don't say that stuff. But he already said it. It's too late. Cat's out of the bag. And I think that's going to really come back to haunt them when Robert Williams is kind of – when he's back in the middle of the series. And so that's what my expectation is. That's how I interpret things. So I think people
– No, he's big. I wanted to ask you about that because – No, they're one of the best teams since the All-Star break. And I wanted to ask you about Robert Williams, one, because of that line. But you saw the work that Evan Mobley, like this Nets team is very susceptible to scoring inside and getting down low and trying to score against them at times. They had oddly good rim protection throughout moments of this game that they're just never going to get some of those blocks that they had over the course of this one. That's a team that you can beat up. So if they do get him back sooner, the Celtics do, that kind of changes the complexion of this series, I think.
Yeah. And look, not only that, but if they don't have him, Daniel Tice can still do some of those things. If they play defense, if Brooklyn plays defense the way they have, and you have a guy stepping up and they're giving up potential lobs, Daniel Tice can still catch lobs. He just can't catch the same lobs that Robert Williams can. And you know, you have to throw them a little bit lower, or he lays them in versus dunking, you know, everybody into oblivion, or he lands and goes back up. Like, you can still throw the ball over the top and beat the defense. It's just how he finishes is a bit different. The blocks that they were getting now, Claxton had some really nice blocks, but Kevin Durant's block, I mean, he really sold out to block those shots because he didn't fear leaving his guy. He's going to fear leaving Al Horford, and he can't even leave however they play it. He's not going to be able to leave his guy and sell out on those blocks because the Celtics, whoever has that ball, is a better passer than basically anybody that the Cavs had in that situation. And the Celtics ball movement has been a lot better. And I just think that they can, if Durant sells out, Boston's going to be so much better at getting those dump offs or hitting the guys in the corner when the defenders suck in. I just feel like what Boston has been capable of doing over the past few months, especially, is being so heavily discounted. Like, people don't even look at who Brooklyn is playing. They're just like, here comes Brooklyn, and everybody should be afraid of Brooklyn. Like, they have to play another team, and that team has been super dominant for a lot. Jason Tatum is an MVP candidate. He's going to finish in the top five in the MVP voting. He's going to probably be first or second team All-NBA. By the way, he's also on this team. So, yeah, you have Kevin Durant, but how about Jason Tatum? How about Jaylen Brown? How about those guys? They're pretty good too. So that's the one thing that it does work both ways. Like, Brooklyn does have to play this other team. They have to stop this other team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For the Cleveland Cavaliers, they will play the winner of Charlotte, Atlanta, which we'll talk about in a second. Good news for them, they might get Jared Allen back for that one. There's a chance that he's going to be able to play. That would be a big boon for them going in to try and win one more to get in as the eighth seed. So coming up, let's preview the other two games in the play-in tournament, including the Pelicans. So I got some thoughts on that one, too. That's coming up here next to today's episode of Locked On NBA. Before we get to that, though, today's episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by Athletic Greens AG1. This is something I use literally every single day, and I started taking AG1 because I just want to be healthier. Time to figure out a complicated supplement routine. I wanted more energy. I wanted a better immune system, and I wanted it with something that tastes good. And now that I've been using it for a couple of weeks, I love what AG1 does for me. So what is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Basically all of the things. And it's super easy. It's just one scoop in a bottle of water every day. I shake it up. I taste it. It's like tropical flavored. I really started to like it. A great part of my morning routine. It also supports better sleep quality and recovery, mental clarity and alertness. It's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of the best products based on the latest science and with constant product iterations and third-party testing. And it's something that's a micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. And AG1 has over 7,000 five-star reviews. So right now it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water a day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NBA network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Today's episode of Locked On NBA is also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It's really that simple. If you eat a protein bar before or after a workout, maybe as a meal replacement for lunch or breakfast, you may as well eat the one that tastes good. And with unbelievably delicious flavors like mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, and their puff bars, which are light and fluffy, the protein-infused marshmallow, the churro puff bar, it's cinnamony, it's awesome. All of them are covered in 100% real chocolate. You're going to love these. They're going to be better than the protein bar that you are eating right now. They're low in calorie and high in protein. And seriously, check out the macros on these. You're going to be blown away. Most have 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, any of the snacky things you eat, Built Bar is going to win every time. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off over at built.com. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every single day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. No paywall or anything like that. Breaking down the biggest stories around the association Monday through Friday. We got two more games in the play-in tournament. I'm excited for tonight because I'm going to be at one of these games and I cannot wait for it. And we've got, but we'll get to the Pels in a second here. Let's start with the Hornets at the Hawks. Per betonline.net, it's Hawks -5 in this one. It doesn't really shock me, but at the same point, the Charlotte team's fun and there's talent there and they play fast. I just don't know if there's as much talent and as much experience as the Atlanta Hawks, which I guess is why they're favored in this one.
Yeah, you know, look, plus they've got Trae Young, and Trae is, you know, probably having one of the more overlooked great seasons. We've talked about that in the show before. Because the team is ninth in the East. They kind of casually blew off the regular season, and that's come back to bite them. And so here they are in this play-in tournament. But Charlotte's defense is just not good, and they'll be able to attack. Trae will be able to get into the middle of the paint. He'll be able to throw his lobs. He'll be able to whip passes around. And I think Atlanta should come away with this. Now, Charlotte is also a tremendous scoring team, and Atlanta has trouble stopping people. So we might see a 150 to 146 play-in game, which is going to be great because I don't have anything to do after that game. I can sit back and relax with a drink and just enjoy just an insane scoring night from everybody. But I just think what the Hawks can do and what Trey can do against that Hornets defense with absolutely no rim protection in Charlotte, it's going to allow Trey to get where he wants to go, finish at the rim, give guys passes, lobs, and all that stuff. I feel like I would take Atlanta in this game for sure.
Yeah, they're somewhat similar, right? Like, not good defense, you know, very good offenses. I think just Atlanta's offense is better, right? Like, I trust Trey Young more. He's kind of been there before. This is, you know, Charlotte's second time in the play-in tournament after last season. I don't know. You know, it's just they're somewhat even. You know, if the Hawks had John Collins in this, who's going to be out, I think that would really kind of set it over the edge. But Capella could have a big game, as you mentioned. There's no center for Charlotte whatsoever. That's been a big glaring hole all season long for this one. So, yeah, I think we're in agreement on this one. This one should be Atlanta, and that means we'll get Cavs and the Hawks, if that's the case, for the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. Both of these games are going to be interesting, right? Because I also think the Pelicans and the Spurs are somewhat evenly matched up, and the Spurs even won the season series 3-1 over New Orleans, but they haven't seen Orleans kind of at full strength all year. You know, they've only seen one game about Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum right after, where they hadn't really kind of figured things out yet. And since February, the start of February, New Orleans has the seventh best offense, eighth best defense. They're kind of peaking at the right time, and they're doing all of this without Zion Williamson all season long. I don't know. Like, they're favored by 5 per betonline.net, but who, right? That guy? Maybe.
Yeah. Sorry. You were saying about them being favored.
Favored. You know, it's, but I, 5 feels a lot. I get it. They're the home team, but it's also Greg Popovich in a do or die situation. Terrifies me. Like, absolutely terrifies me.
You know what would change those odds? If Zion was on the floor. So let's play a little real or fake here. Real or fake, Zion Williamson will suit up and play his first game of the season in this play-in game.
This is very fake. That's very fake. If it were up to him, he would be doing it. I'll tell you that much. He really wants to play. You saw that dunk video from him a couple of weeks ago. That was trying to send a message to the Pelicans being like, I'm healthy. Play me. His stepdad gave an interview to a local radio station in Baton Rouge about a week or so ago. And was like, I expect him to play. He's not ready to play yet. He is playing 5-on-5. I'll say this. It's fake for right now. But if they were to get the eighth seed and play the Phoenix Suns, it's a 15% chance that he plays in that one. So there's a chance that he can play in that one. So if you wanted a reason to maybe root for the Pels, that's what it is here. But they got to get past this game first. I don't know. I think they can do it with Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum if they get them going. There's no real, like, they just have more top-end talent than San Antonio Spurs do.
They definitely have more top-end talent. The question is, will the Spurs system, the Spurs being the Spurs and just always getting about 15% more out of players than any other team seems to be able to get, will that be enough? And I think the one thing here is that the Spurs, there's a consistency to the Spurs where no matter what point in the game, there's generally no panic in their game. It's always just, okay, this is the shot that we're taking. Like, if New Orleans comes out and hits them with a 12-2 run, yes, you to call your timeout, you say, all right, here we go. We've taken their hit. Let's just, now we do what we do. We just recover and do what we do. We got plenty of time left. And I think that level of experience on the San Antonio side certainly gives them an edge because we've seen talent can mean nothing. In a one game scenario like this, you can kind of have a bad shooting night and that could just doom you. And so I think the experience and the poise, and look, DeJounte Murray is a pretty damn good player himself. So, you know, there's some talent on that other side too. But I will say that New Orleans, since getting McCollum, has been pretty good. And I would still say that the Pelicans with McCollum and Ingram, I think that that's a little too much. And it might just be best for the Spurs to have, hey, this was nice. You know, we made our run. We got into the play-in. But at 34 and 48, just fade into the sunset. You know, might be best for them to kind of go get their draft pick and whatever. I like the Pelicans in this one, but this one should go down to the wire.
Yeah, this one feels like it's going to be close. It might come down to how rookie Herb Jones does on a guy like Murray, right? Like, that's who they're going to throw on him in the four games that they've played. He's actually held him to just 12 total points over those four games. That's a big challenge for a rookie in an elimination game. So I'm kind of excited about that one. As you mentioned, the Spurs kind of system and Greg Popovich, right? Like, he's going to find some way to scheme CJ or Brandon Ingram kind of out of the game for a period of time. And then it comes down to some of the role players, and maybe the Spurs have the advantage there. And a guy like Keldon Johnson, who's averaging over 20 points per game over their final 10, you can tell I have the stats and have been looking into this game a whole lot here the past day. You know, he's someone that worries me. Jakob Poeltl is a guy that, you know, is going to get some token votes probably for most improved player, I think, too. And what can he do in this one? You know, all of these games should be, I think, pretty fun to watch here on Wednesday night. I don't know. I'm a big fan of the play-in tournament because it just adds something that I think is great to the whole season and just makes this more fun right now.
Yes. Yes. But I also will agree with your previous point from a few weeks ago where we do need to reinstate the games behind kind of threshold, because as much as this is going to be fun to watch this one extra game, I don't think the possibility of the San Antonio Spurs at 34 and 48 going up against the Clippers, who were 42 and 40, who, despite their injuries, did their jobs and were 8 games ahead and 6 games ahead of the Pelicans. I just don't think it's entirely fair. But then again, you're playing for the opportunity to go up against the Phoenix Suns, and it doesn't really matter.
We're really good.
All that.
At all.
But again, like, I go back to the point that I was making before about Minnesota. Minnesota's 46 and 36 coming into this. They have done everything they need to do to be a playoff team. The fact that they were in this tournament still, like, that is problematic enough for, I think, the league to kind of look at just tweaking the threshold a little bit. The East, I mean, that's all, you know, one game separates those four teams. That's a different story. Like, I love it in the East, but in the West, I don't love it quite as much.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think like 5 games is the right number. What they had in the bubble is the perfect way to do it, because you could see a team like, if Minnesota had lost and then they just kind of collapse, all of a sudden they go from 7 to out. And that truly does not seem fair. I don't know. I like the excitement. I like that we didn't have 3 weeks of tanking and resting guys for a number of teams that, you know, otherwise wouldn't have been doing that. So overall, I think it's a good development for the league. But yeah, there needs to be something a little bit tweaked to it, probably.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of Locked On NBA. Enjoy the games tonight. As always, on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales, at John_Corrales on Twitter, and I host the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. This is the Locked On NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.